This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. Anita U. Ali is a first-generation Muslim Khmer artist born in Cambodia and raised in the U.S. Her work, called The Buddhist Bug, combines live performance, installation, photography, and video art to explore issues like displacement and belonging. And she does this by performing as a human-sized bug. The Buddhist Bug exhibition is being shown for the first time in Malaysia at Wei Ling Contemporary from the 19th of June to the 18th of August. And Anita is here with me today. How are you, Anita?
Hi, thank you so much for having me here.
So Anita, tell me about yourself. You live in Seattle now, but what was your journey to getting there?
Wow, well, that is a very loaded question for someone who considers herself a diasporic person. Mm-hmm. Home is quite elusive, and it's always within dislocation that we locate ourselves. So long story short, I was born in Cambodia, left when I was 5 due to the war, became a refugee in the U.S., where my family settled in Chicago, to which I was raised my entire life, and didn't return to Cambodia until I was 30 years old for the first time as part of an artist residency program. Then I would continue to go back and forth to Cambodia, trying to kind of figure myself out through very short periods of time there, 1 week, 2 weeks, 7 days. And then ultimately, I received a Fulbright Fellowship that would bring me back as a resident in 2011, where I stayed for 5 years. And then relocated again back to the U.S., having children and wanting them to be in a sort of better educational system. Then moving to the States and ultimately settling in Seattle from 2016 to now.
And what was it like when you went back to Cambodia as an adult? Was there a sense, and you mentioned this earlier, this idea of this elusive idea of home. Was there a sense of home?
I actually have an entire one-woman solo theatrical piece that I do called Living Absence, Living Memory. And it is all about that experience of returning home for the first time and finding fragments of yourself. I sort of put it in this way. It's pulling together the fragments of yourself to create a kind of wholeness that is not attainable after such a rupture in your life. Mm. That's what the experience of departing, not by choice, but because you were forced to leave, does, you know, to your entire existence. And the goal of trying to achieve this wholeness, I think, is a kind of white construct that isn't achievable through the marginalized body. So my return home as an adult sort of really put things in perspective. And in the poetry that came out of that body of work, I actually had no sensation. My very initial reaction to being in the landscape of Cambodia and amongst the people was a numbness, was a struggle to find words, to find thoughts. A lot of it centered around belonging and not belonging, so a kind of unbelonging. Mm. It was very difficult.
And is that the nexus in which the Buddhist Bug was born?
No. What's been very interesting, from the first time that I went as a 30-year-old adult, I would return several times over the course of 5 or 6 years, having do nothing, having create nothing, having writings that were journal fragments, but really there was no strong inclination to create work. And what I wouldn't realize until almost a decade later was that all these ideas were incubating to lead up to a much larger body of work. And one of that is the Buddhist Bug series, which is a work that dates from 2009 until 2015, when we left by choice this time, Cambodia.
Could you explain, for those of us who may not have seen the work, what the Buddhist bug is?
Well, it is a real visual treat. I would encourage people to try to search for it online because
I've seen
so much
the photos. They're
it.
Just they're wonderful. There's just something about they're very powerful, and yet at the same time they feel so playful, which is what I really liked about them.
I think that's what I love about the work too. So, if you don't know what the Buddhist bug is, it is it's a creature, it's an entity that can be very, very long. What I call can expand to about 100 meters long of this coiled structure wrapped in this orange fabric. And on one end, you have her head, which is usually embodied by my body and my face. And on the other end are her legs, which stick out of the garment. And I, of course, jokingly say that it's because of my yoga training that I'm able to extend to such a length. But the bug also can coil into a ball and can travel almost coiled up and compact, right? That's also part of its creation, where it can do that on a rickshaw or on a tuk-tuk, on different modes of transportation, an ox cart even. And so the bug is able to become this sort of playful object of people's gaze because the bug sticks out in this sort of everyday landscape that she's captured through photography and video mainly, which is of Cambodia. It's usually a urban or a rural landscape, but it is something that is quintessentially Cambodian. And it's a particular moment that's being captured. Usually people are gawking at the bug or have a curious look about the bug. And the bug is usually not very expressive. She's quite stoic, in fact. And for everything that she is, she doesn't know she's different. She thinks she's where she needs to be, right? But the looks she gets in these photos that are captured tell us otherwise, that something's not quite right here. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I am playing with humor. I am playing with a sense of religious hybridity alongside a tolerance that I hope people will have as they read into it these different sort of religious aesthetics that I'm playing with.
Mm. And the photographs themselves, which are the ones that I saw, they're essentially, as you mentioned, yourself as the bug in all of these very everyday scenes. Now, what was the process of creating those images of going out there? Did they know that this was happening? How did you set this up?
Yeah. No, I'm very intentional, and these things don't happen instantly. A lot of my setup requires me actually going into spaces several times and into communities multiple times to make sure that the people who do come to those places know what's about to happen. And so oftentimes, first I'll go and try to find a spot that I feel some kind of connection to that will make this image that I'm trying to, you know, capture in this moment. It's usually a kind of bustling place that, you know, what I say, where everyday culture is happening. A lot of my work is about putting contemporary performance within that context. I believe that the sort of everyday people and culture need to access this work, that it shouldn't just be hung up in the galleries and surrounded by white walls where the same group of people go over and over. So a lot of my work takes the work out into the public spaces, into places where a contemporary art isn't usually seen. That's really important to me. And then the second layer of that is returning to those spaces multiple times to talk to people. That's usually when I get a gauge to see if communities, and they're usually very localized communities, are even interested in engaging further. I explain what I'm doing. I bring out former photographs or sketches that I've utilized. I go there with my collaborating partner, who is photographer Masahiro Sugano, who happens to be my partner as well. And so we both talk to people to say, you know what, we're about to do this really strange thing. We want to know if this is okay to do, if you would be interested in participating. Now, they don't understand the full ramifications of that participation, but usually I get a lot of smiles out of people and they're interested. Many think it's a ghost story. They think it's a strange movie that's about to roll out. I sometimes allow them to go ahead and have that kind of imagination because I think that's important that they make sense out of it the best way into the work. You know, contemporary art isn't the easiest thing to get into all the time, but the most important thing about contemporary art is that you question and that you push your imagination to allowing for possibilities to kind of unfold, right? So that's usually what happens.
And what kinds of reactions do you get from these people? How do they change their initial perception and you know, what they end up with?
Yeah, I love that question because this is when I get to sort of reveal the magic of this kind of work. To me, what happens oftentimes is this thing called suspension of disbelief. So I have come into these communities and I have talked to them in different ways with my limited Khmer, but also I usually go in there with somebody who has much better Cambodian speaking skills. And so they reiterate my ideas. I come in with my sketches. And then I come the second time, right, with my team, my full force of my video photography team, and then my assistants and my volunteer for the leg and my tuk-tuk driver, whatever it is. We kind of roll in deep. And then they see me and my team rolling out the coiled bug creature, setting this whole thing up, inserting the legs, and then finally we insert me as the body, and that is the magical moment. All eyes suddenly blaze with this like wonder and curiosity because they've just now entered into this magical realm that the bug has literally come alive. And I really take on the creature's presence too because I am performing live and anything can happen. And so the camera is really great at capturing this. And if you look at the video components of this, it tells another layer of the story that the frozen moment of the photographs don't. But what it always captures, people in awe that this is happening and unfolding in front of their faces. And I love that. And everybody thinks it's as real as they can allow their imaginations to take it. Their expressions are real and in real time. The curiosity and then the impulse to engage, whether that's a child tickling her feet, a child being pushed into the forefront to go engage further. It's me sort of, you know, waving and undulating my body and getting people to like interact a little bit more. All of it, people just get sort of frozen and curious all at the same time. And it's a marvelous thing to watch.
And what is the performance aspect like for you? Because you did just mention that, you know, it's not just you in a costume, you're performing.
Yeah.
What is that like?
Yeah. I mean, that to me, all sorts of things are happening inside of me, but the most important thing is I don't crack. I make sure I don't crack up. I don't break character. I try to stay as stoic, but as involved and engaged. I am making eye contact constantly, and I am thinking, like, what is that person thinking? Or I'm looking at that person knowing they want to engage further. And so my entire body starts to maneuver so that they get that I want them to engage. And so this sort of nonverbal interaction and expression start to happen, and I think that is what's beautiful. There are no words spoken, yet people engage on the levels that they need to. And I find that really powerful about performance.
We do need to take a break. But when we come back, I really want to hear much more about this Buddhist bug. I'm speaking to artist Anita Yu Ali, who was born in Cambodia and raised in the US, about her project called The Buddhist Bug, which is being shown at Wei Ling Contemporary from the 19th of June to the 18th of August. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. I'm speaking to artist Anita Yu Ali about her project called The Buddhist Bug, which is being shown at Wei Ling Contemporary from the 19th of June to the 18th of August. Anita, before the break, you sort of gave us this really vivid description of what the experience of the Buddhist bug can be like. I am curious, though, where did the inspiration for this come from?
Yes, I think that's another question that everybody likes to ask. And I would say It comes from a variety of sources and over years of thinking about the creation of this entity. I definitely wanted to tackle this idea of the diasporic dilemma, which is when a person is sort of fluctuating between the insider-outsider perspective mm-hmm. constantly within the negotiation within their identity and places of location. But, you know, that's a very conceptual idea. How do you make that more physical and concrete? Then enter me coming into Cambodia for the first time and seeing this landscape of Buddhism, which I wasn't aware of. Mm. You know, I grew up as a Muslim young person in America around a very multicultural community of Muslim people. And my parents are Khmer, Cham, Muslim, and that was the one thing they held very dear to them in their assimilation to American society, was that their children would be raised Muslim, that by God, this is the one thing they wanted to do. But in doing so, they also didn't fully allow us to be Cambodian, and that meant also accessing a very Buddhist, Khmer culture. So when I went to Cambodia, I realized how much of a minority my family was, because I started to see how much the society was really rooted in the Buddhism, you know, from the altars that are everywhere to the saffron robes that the Buddhist monks have on, and the Buddhist monks were everywhere. So I just saw the orange everywhere, and that sort of opened up my world to rethinking like the struggles of my family and what they were holding on to culturally and spiritually, and then how we were essentially enveloped in the Buddhism, right? And so when I started to think about this creature, I knew that she had to be a color that would create that sort of a wrap. Mm. You know, she essentially, the Buddhist bug is borrowing the colors of the saffron robes sure. of the Buddhist monks, but her top part and the modest way of dressing is formulated after the Muslim garment of the chador, right? It's following hijab. And so that combination was really important for me in speaking about dilemma, in speaking about spiritual struggle, right, particularly in a Cambodian context. Mm. And so the next element was figuring out the form, and that form came when I gave birth to my first child in 2009. And when I gave birth to her, people would gift us with things, and the thing that she was gifted with was this play tunnel. It's a collapsible plastic yes, right. toy that yeah. you just sort of spread out. And the babies love it because they just crawl through. Mm-hmm. And then you like, you know, shape it back. You flatten it. It collapses. And I looked at this thing and I was like, this thing is amazing. Look at how compact it gets. And then when you spread it, it becomes bigger. And then that was when all the pieces clicked. And I was like, this is the creature. She has to be a bridge, a tunnel, and something that collapses compactly. Like the refugee struggle, they only leave with what they can carry, that this object is the form of what the bug would take.
I love that the idea is to literalize what that experience is, because it's both a literal representation of, as you just said, the refugee experience, but also it's also very conceptual, because there's this element of play, there's this element of performance involved. How did all of these different elements come together?
You know, I think that is exactly what makes me an artist. I think it is that sort of unnameable moment where you put these very different ways of thinking together in a way that only makes sense to you. When everybody else looks at it, they're going to have a million questions. But to you, as the artist and the person creating this, makes perfect sense. So like even you asking me these questions, you know, I have to answer it in these very layered ways for you to understand it. But for me, that moment of everything coming together makes perfect sense. Everything that has been leading up to this gestation period of creating this project has been a result of, you know, this long years of separation and displacement, motherhood coming into the picture, right? You know, so much reading on contemporary art and theory and history, the experience of going to a country and being wrapped around its colors, right? Thinking visually. So I think that is the only way I know how to make art that makes sense to me, which is putting all these pieces together so that I can deliver something that now the world can receive, now that viewers and art patrons and non-patrons can look at and wonder, you know, what the project is about, but also where did these ideas come from?
So you've mentioned before that your work also draws inspiration from Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis. Where does that sort of play into the idea?
Well, actually, that was written by somebody else who pulled on that. My work is actually really influenced by science fiction and my love of science fiction and growing up around so much of it, you know, whether it's Star Trek to Star Wars.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Dune, right? Yeah. The Frank Herbert series. It's sort of all of that has come into, this moment, right, of thinking through these ideas and figuring out a way in. And science fiction, I thought, was always so important to me in terms of popular culture, but it never made it into a lot of my work because my work is also very politically charged. I never found a way to work science fiction into it until this series, until I finally figured out how to better utilize garment and fabrication into this sort of performance art realm.
And science fiction is also a genre that actually excels in talking about issues of otherness and displacement,
yes,
and people who somehow or other don't belong or have, you know, struggled with their identity. Was that part of the reason why that idea appealed to you as well?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that science fiction also creates and allows you to create other worlds for difference to exist in ways that you don't have to explain or re-explain or uncode to people, that difference is allowed to foster and even take, you know, leading characters, right? We usually don't see that in any other form. So I just, you know, have finally figured out how to create these kinds of characters that make slight references to them, but ultimately they're also characters that are heroine figures to me. All of these personas are larger than life characters that I get to embody, you know, that I get to share with the world so that, you know, many other kids who may have experienced this kind of get to see this sort of oddness and find somewhat a little humor, but also some pride in that difference.
Now, I understand that you do have a connection to Malaysia as well. Could you explain what that is?
Yes, I have a lot of family here, mostly in Kota Baru, also in Johor and Terengganu, and that is because my father is Malaysian. So that makes me a quarter Malaysian because he's half Malaysian, half Jam. My mother is half Thai and then half Khmer, and so I am a quarter of this mix that is very Southeast Asian. And in our struggle to flee the Khmer Rouge, many of my family had to decide where they were going to end up. And so a lot of them were allowed to come to Malaysia because of those roots. And so many have settled in the Kelantan state. And maybe they're listening to this. They can come out. My grandmother, which is my father's mother, lived in Kelantan for the rest of her, you know, life after leaving Cambodia. And my parents actually have a home out here. This is where they want to retire.
They find
community here. I have relatives in Kuala Lumpur. Maybe they'll come to this show at
And
Wei
this Ling. Is your first, this is the first time you're showing the work in Malaysia, isn't it?
This is the first time I'm showing the work in Malaysia, but it's also the most extensive showing of the collection, which is why I think it's so exciting for a gallery, you know, as prestigious as Wei Ling, to take on performance art, but also to take on this unique body of work. This is not an easy work to kind of get into, but it's also, she's able to show, you know, the almost the entire collection is being shown for the first time.
And what will we be seeing in the gallery itself? Because for me, the performance and the public aspect of it is such an intriguing part of the work that I'm trying to figure out what the gallery experience will be like.
Well, if you get there on time at 7 o'clock, you will
see... On the 19th of June, right?
On the 19th, yeah. You will be witness to the bug coming to life. So I will embody the garment and bring her to life, and you'll have a chance to interact. And so I think the whole gallery will pretty much be transformed where the bug... installation, which is, I think we are giving Wei Ling about 60 meters of the garment, because the rest of the garment is going to Munich, because she's showing in Munich right after Kuala Lumpur. And so you will really see this extensive coiled creature kind of really, you know, grab hold of the Wei Ling space and kind of reclaim it for the bug. So the bug will sort of invade that space. You'll definitely feel the presence physically of the bug. And then you'll see lots of photos. I think I've really handpicked with Wei Ling some of the photos that I feel are powerful images to show. And then you'll see the two-channel video projection, which is comprised of 20,000 photos in a time-lapse video piece that was shown at APT8.
Mm. And the show, the work itself, as you mentioned earlier, first started in 2009, and it's been a decade since you started working on it. How has the work evolved and changed in this time?
Yeah, it. So 2009 was the prototype, and that was right after I had given birth to my first child. And really, that costume, you know, and garment like fell apart because I was sewing it with a student worker, and we tried to do our best with our very limited sewing skills. And we put together a few images and were able to put it up in part of my MFA program, and then. For my Fulbright year in 2011, I sort of lugged the prototype to Cambodia, thinking maybe we'll make something of it, maybe we won't, but I'll just take it just in case. And then I think once I really stayed in Cambodia, I was so inspired that I just decided that this is it. This is where it feels right to, like, truly give birth to this creature. I mean, that's why I'm calling the show a creation mythology, because it is true to what has become of this decade-long of work. And then that was it. My husband and I, my collaborator, just decided to take advantage of what we were noticing as a very rapid changing Cambodia. We were seeing buildings go up constantly, construction barriers, and then we had just come into this, this moment. We felt a very interesting contemporary moment. And so part of it was to allow the bug to come into that moment, but it's also capturing a setting that was going to change. We knew very much that it was going to change very quickly the physical landscape of Cambodia because of globalization, right? And because of the rapid kind of commodification that was happening within Cambodian context and markets. And so the bug over those years, 2012, 2013, and then 2015 when we did the final shoot, and the final video for Into the Night series was really, you could really see that in these images, is you could really look at both the rural and the urban images and start to see some things that you're not going to see today. You know, the yellow sort of colonial mansions are disappearing. So many skyscrapers are coming in. The rickshaws, which were so dominant, the sort of ciclo rickshaws that used to be like the primary means of transportation in the 50s, 60s, and even the 70s, is barely nothing. Even the tuk-tuks that you'll see, one of the images that the bug is on, you know, are being replaced by Indian imported tuk-tuks, which there's nothing wrong with. But again, you know, every single one of those images marks a particular time. And I think as we progress years and years later, I think you'll really be able to put that in the context of those contemporary moments that will now exist as the past.
Mm. And has your own relationship with Cambodia and that question that we started off with in the beginning, this idea of what is home, has that changed and evolved in the process of working on the Buddhist bug?
Yeah, I think it's a question that is sort of always going to be on my mind. And I think one thing that I've come to now accept about myself is that I have multiple homes, and that while, you know, I'm in a really fortunate place to say that, I think especially with, you know, the global state that we're in, with the large amount of displacement that globally we're seeing, you know, from what's happening in Syria to what's happening in Myanmar. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we are in a moment where the world has to take responsibility for the crisis that is the refugee crisis that isn't going away. And how fortunate I am that I can call Chicago, Seattle, Phnom Penh, Cambodia, and even, you know, Kota Bharu, my home. Like that's a very special place to be in. And so I've really come to terms with the inescapable factor for me that it has to be about going in between these multiple places, that my home is wherever, you know, wherever my family is, but it's also wherever I take my work. Like my home is like, it's in that creation and it's in that sharing of that process, because that is how I make community. And that is what I've earned the right to do as an artist, is through this kind of passport that is art making.
And is there some sense that when you do make art about an issue like this, not just one that's politically charged, not just one that's current, but one that is so... It affects so many people, as you just said, and it's something that we are not seeming to be able to reach a resolution to. Is there some sense of responsibility or some sense of how do I even begin to tell the story?
I think that what I've come to understand is, and that's because having been a community organizer and an activist and also an artist, I've come to really learn that you have to root your work in a specificity, that it isn't actually about being universal, right? Which is always the thing that's sort of thrown in there. I think that is the problem, is you can't speak for the many. You can only speak about your experience and your insights and your perspectives, and you have to be really rooted in that. If it should happen that other people can come into that and find points of empathy and compassion, well, by God, I think you've done a really great job. But that isn't the intention going into it. And you won't see that until you've really created the work, put out the work, step back from it, reflect on it, and then look at everything. And then maybe you can make those sort of larger frameworks, but you don't go into it making that. I think that's what could be really problematic and often leads to a very colonial positionality,
sure,
right? A very savior kind of complex coming in and trying to solve everything. Mm. That isn't the point of what I try to do. I mean, I'm really speaking with a very specific lens. I think even telling you the story of how all of these came out is very specific. And I think it's very important to do that and to not make excuses for, you know, how layered and complex those experiences are, because that's what we have to make better. I think in the larger frame of things is we have to be better at making things complex. The world isn't simple, and we're not going to have simple solutions for things. That just isn't how it works, and that's why we're in such difficult positions.
And yet I think what actually is interesting about your work is that despite that complexity, there is something very accessible about it. Just looking at the pictures and the fact that you engage with people on such a public and interactive level. Is that something that is important to you in your work in general? Because, you know, when it comes to contemporary art, there is that sense sometimes that it's not something that everyone can access.
Yeah, that sense that it's removed,
yeah.
that there's oftentimes a distance. I think that's why I love performance so much. And I always claim that even through these photographs and videos, you know, the work is rooted in performance. Without the body and the performance through the body, these works fall apart. You know, if you don't see me in it, like physically me, then it doesn't work for me. And I think the reason being is that performance opens up worlds, right? It doesn't only create worlds of wonder, but there's an energy that is being exchanged. You cannot help but feel someone's energy when you look at them in the eyes. You know, that's empathy. When you can look at someone and you could see beyond like their physical being. And that really happens to me when I'm performing. There's a reason why people will start tearing up or they'll crack a smile or a child will feel like they can come forward and engage and tickle the bug and whatever they're doing. You know, children are sort of the most wonderful people when engaging with the bug. So I do encourage families out there to come to the opening because I think we need children to participate in contemporary art. It should not be removed from everyday people and their interpretation of these moments, you know. It doesn't matter if you have these sort of heady big concepts. It doesn't work if you can't reach someone on a basic level of interest, inquiry, and wonder.
Yes. What do you hope that the audience will take away from the work?
I just want them to be able to make space for difference. I want them to ask questions and not necessarily be given answers to. You know, I think that is too easy for the artist to just provide the answers. I think the whole reason why I make the work is for you to ask questions, and maybe those questions will lead to you wondering and putting some things together to make sense of it for yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be the magic for me, is for people to come and turn to the work and like sort of embrace like why it is what it is.
And you've worked on the Buddhist bug for 10 years now. Is there more? What's in the future for the project?
Well, it continues to be a work that just draws so many people like interested in either exhibiting it further or asking me to, you know, bring certain components of the bug. I'm done with the Cambodian chapter of the bug, but I'm very interested in looking at the bug in other parts of her identity, because as I told you, I'm not just Khmer, but I think it would be interesting to perform the bug here in Malaysia within that context of really framing it, you know, like going to multiple communities. I mean, I even think, you know, Kota Baru would be a really interesting place to do that work. And then ultimately, I would like to bring it to the Middle East. I think there is something about, you know, the Islam that we practice that is referenced, you know, to the Middle East. And I would really love to see a hybrid creature such as the bug carrying both Buddhism and Islam to, you know, a desert setting, like wherever that would tolerate a piece like this. Like, I don't think many of the countries there may not be open to it, but there might be places there that would be. And I think that would be an interesting chapter for the Buddhist bug.
And you have actually been showing the Buddhist bug in many places around the world. What is the reaction that you get from cultures and communities that may not be quite familiar with that context?
Yeah. So the most interesting place I've performed it in is in Lithuania. It's in Kaunas. And if you don't know about the art world, Lithuania, their pavilion at the Venice Biennale just was awarded like the top prize, and they put together a performance,
That's right.
That's speaking about environmental issues. Mm-hmm. So I was very fortunate to perform it in Lithuania in 2016, and they loved it. They actually had me perform it in a bookstore, and so the bug was literally coiled around these shelving of books, and they opened the bookstore to just regular people to come in, and of course they were surprised to see this creature who's looking out the window, like the bug is right in front of the display case, and this is one of the images you'll see in the show too, looking out, and then the feet are like wrapped around some books sitting on a chair, just sort of cross-legged. It's a very interesting image, but I thought that was really powerful to do that in a bookstore setting, you know, to really represent like knowledge and the fact that a country like Lithuania that, you know, a lot of people don't know about, you know, has such like a reverence for art and for knowledge, to me was a really highlight, you know, a big highlight for the Buddhist Bug.
Thank you so much, Anita. It's been great hearing more about the Buddhist Bug.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here in Kuala Lumpur, and I'm just looking forward to being here.
I do hope that we get to see the Buddhist Bug out in public spaces at some point here as well.
We should have had her coiled here in your like radio
I should have
setting.
Extended an invitation. That would have been amazing. You will be able to see a live performance of the Buddhist Bug at Wailing Contemporary on June 19th, which is also the opening of Anita's exhibition. I've been speaking to artist Anita Yu Ali about her project called The Buddhist Bug, where she performs as a human-sized bug and explores issues like identity and displacement. The work, which combines live performance, installation, photography, and video art, is showing at Wailing Contemporary from the 19th of June to the 18th of August. For more information, you can go to wailing-gallery.com. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segments, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my, on our BFM app, and also on Spotify. You've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.